Welcome back. It is our great pleasure to be with Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Geraldine Brooks. You were talking about Columbia. You took the course. You weren't teaching the course. That's very interesting because it says to me that one, even as a Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist, continues to learn.
Oh, no, this was back in the days when dinosaurs walked the earth.
That was before the Pulitzer.
Oh, yeah, it was...
BP and AP, is that how it goes?
No, I had worked as a reporter in Sydney, and I was lucky enough to get a scholarship named for a very distinguished foreign correspondent, Greg Shackleton, who'd been killed by the Indonesian army in East Timor. And I went off to school in New York City very wide-eyed. And,
oh, I'll bet.
And was lucky enough to hear from great, great newspaper people like Breslin and Roger Angel came. And, you know, everybody drops in at Columbia. So
that must have been beautiful.
What was it that made you make the transition from being a reporter to a writer? And then to a novelist.
Reporters are writers.
Well, but it's a different profession, and it's all words, but they are words that are that do different things and have different predicates.
Exactly. I had written one book while I was still a journalist, which was my first book, Nine Parts of Desire, but it was very much a journalist book, and it was exploring what I had learned as a correspondent in the Middle East. Particularly about the women of Islam and the different ways they negotiated their lives in some pretty tough situations. So I took a leave from the newspaper to do that book, and then I went back to daily journalism. And I really loved being a journalist. I really, every bit of it was fantastic.
But and you did work for a world-class newspaper.
Work for the Wall Street Journal for getting on for 14 years, I think. But
now that's the writer's part as a world-class journalist. The editorial, we'll negotiate that.
Oh, man, those things almost gave me an aneurysm. Yes. But that was the beauty of the journal, because the news pages and the editorial page were very different. And I used to say, you know, are they sure they know they hired a feminist tree-hugging pinker?
From Australia?
But they didn't care, you know, and
actually, they probably went out of their way to do that.
Probably did, but we never got second-guessed on stories, and that was wonderful. So I hope that continues under the new regime.
Indeed, don't we all? But so you had been reporting for these 14 years for the journal and wrote the Nine Shades of Desire?
Nine Parts.
Parts. Well, it's the idea of being able to genuinely explore from experience women's Islamic women's lives, pre being able to do that very subtly with novels. I would think that's a dance almost, that the two would join hands and form a circle for you.
Well, the frustrating thing about journalism, which is its great strength, is that you're not allowed to make anything up or even speculate, really. So you can go as far as the facts take you, but no farther. And when you get to the end of the string of facts, you must stop. But with fiction, you can research until you know what is known, and then you've got the license to take the great leap and say how you thought it might have been. And you draw on all kinds of different emotional truths and experiences to make that imaginative jump. But it is so much fun to have the license to do that.
Are you going to quote Richard Slotkin?
No, actually, I'm going to...
Richard Slotkin is an historian, a world-class historian, who says that when he has the facts and knows what happens, he writes his history and wins big prizes to do it and all that. But when he knows what happened and can't prove it, then he writes novels.
Yeah, well, exactly.
We have a good friend who is a world-class anthropologist, wrote a book called Unsettled, History of the Jewish People. It is, in Mel Konner's inimitable fashion, thorough. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent writer, and it is, you know, probably 700, 800 pages in the history of the mm-hmm. Jewish people.
An anthropology of the Jewish people, as he puts it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in some ways, not to take nothing away from Mel's book, certainly what I think you accomplish is a thousand-year history, mm-hmm. Succinctly. Mm-hmm. You know, just certain key parts. Obviously, there's a great deal left unsaid, but what you do say is, by and large, certainly outside of the Jewish community, is very unfamiliar. Mm-hmm. And that flow of events from Spain to Italy,
in 1492,
to Venice, to the Balkans is a remarkable story. In many ways, it's a story of Western Europe, mm-hmm, or at least yeah. our history. Though the English don't figure prominently in this.
She took care of that when she was doing Year of Wonders. When she did the English, it's okay.
Moving slowly to the east, right? We'll be in Australia soon. That novel you've been wanting to write about Australia. It goes to this, the particularly for the uninitiated, that ability to draw conclusions, to finish out the pieces of the pattern that you're able to do in a novel that you can't do in reporting. Mm-hmm. Is in some ways extraordinarily valuable for ignorant readers like me.
Yeah, I think even to some extent in some of the way Jewish history is presented, even in the Jewish community, is very Holocaust-centric.
Absolutely.
And I think going back into the past to show the patterns that have repeated themselves of tolerance followed by persecution. Some people who are quite surprised by that history.
Well, particularly in America, yeah. The 1492 to Americans has one meaning and yeah. one meaning only, yeah. and that's the so-called discovery of America. Mm. 1492 in Spain is a radically different event, and certainly 1492 to either a Jew or a Muslim.
Well,
actually, a non-Catholic Christian was a very different experience.
Interestingly, one of the great eyewitness accounts of the expulsion of the Jews in 1492 comes to us from Columbus.
Really?
Yeah, as he was getting his expeditionary ships, mm-hmm. He's down at the dock with the Chandlers and all that, and he saw this pathetic, huddled mass of Jews who had been given a date certain in which to leave Spain or else, and he writes a very moving account of them.
The option was to leave Spain, convert, I think.
That's it. Leave Spain or convert.
Or suffer the consequences, which was, either get physically thrown out or killed, imprisoned.
Yeah. It
was
tortured either way.
It was not a
pleasant
option.
And then if you did convert, you still might suffer the consequences.
You still were in a fairly precarious position.
Well, but you sent me back to Torquemada. Thank you very much. And his grandmother had been a Jew. So, I mean, the mix of all of this and your character, who is the persecutor in the Spanish, by the time we get to Venice, has come from a Jewish tradition. So the knots, the K-N-O-T knots in all of this are very poignant and real and true to life. Is that part of what is so enticing about the richness of writing novels?
Well, I wasn't sure how true to life it was going to be. I wasn't sure what as I said, when I started this book, there was so much I didn't know, and I wasn't sure what the resources would be on the Inquisition era in Spain. And, blow me down, the resources are extensive, largely because the Catholic Church took such impeccable note of what it did in interrogations. Yeah, so the interrogations are documented. There was a scribe in the room the whole time, and a lot of it is just the detail of ordinary domestic life, because a lot of what people are being interrogated about is, we saw you choke when you ate a piece of bacon. Does that mean you're revolted by pork? And why did you buy from the kosher butcher instead of in the meat market? And the poor person who's being interrogated says, because he was cheaper that day, And so you get this sort of picture of ordinary domestic life at the same time as, they have this exactitude where they'll even have a sort of parenthetical comment by the scribe saying he screamed for a long time, So, many great persecutors, this desire to document what is being undertaken.
Which happened in Nazi Germany, too, in that Holocaust century.
And I'm afraid it happened when we were waterboarding recently, but somebody got rid of the videotapes, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I assume this was intentional, and I'm not even sure I want to know the answer to that. you're setting this in the former Yugoslavia, in Sarajevo, to me was brilliant. And I don't know whether you worked forward or backward. And obviously, since you'd been a reporter there, you had some, intellectual but also visceral connections mm-hmm. to that community. But part of what is so interesting is in the 20th and the 21st century, we're still dealing with essentially a microcosm of those religious conflicts. We have Orthodox Christians, we have Jews, we have Catholics, we have Protestants, we have Muslims, and they're all in this place, and the trouble is still very great and still unresolved.
And we'll come back to Sarajevo in just a moment so I don't have to interrupt what I'm sure will be a rich and important answer from Geraldine Brooks. Please be with us when we return in just a moment.